short and sweet. That's what we've done with this episode of the Vermont Edition podcast. I'm Matthew Smith, Vermont Edition producer, and I wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. The local beer and craft distillery movement is roaring in Vermont, with still new breweries and distilleries popping up around the state all the time. Vermonters like the idea of supporting local producers who are making innovative new flavors and products. But until recently, it was not necessarily true that most of the ingredients in these libations were also locally produced. That's changing as people experiment and explore with how to go from farm to pint glass or highball. New collaborations involving farmers, maltsters, and brewers have created uniquely Vermont beverages. Today, we're going to talk about what's happening here and where it might go. Heather Darby is an associate professor with UVM Extension. At UVM's Borderview Research Farm in Aalborg, she researches and experiments with grains, hops, and other crops that thrive in Vermont's climate and soil. Heather, it's a pleasure to have you back on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And Andrew Peterson is head maltster and owner of Peterson Quality Malt, a craft malt house based in Moncton, for now at least, that supplies malted grains to brewers, distillers, and home brewers. It's a pleasure to have you on the show as well.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
So, you know, there was a time, of course, when all of the ingredients involved in anything made in Vermont would have been from Vermont. And, you know, it was a massive innovation to be able to have interstate and international trade and shipping and refrigeration. And so are we swinging back, Heather, to some sort of sense of local production means local ingredients? Or, you know, is this a balancing out? How widespread is it to see local ingredients in our local brews?
Yeah, well, it's I wouldn't say it's anything necessarily new. But the increase in the number of breweries in Vermont and actually across the country has been skyrocketing. There's three new brewery openings every day in the U.S. And there will be roughly 10,000 breweries open within the next year. So that's the same trend in Vermont. So there's more breweries. People are looking for ways to differentiate themselves, the products that they make. And of course, in Vermont and in New England, there's a strong buy local movement where businesses, food producers, consumers want to be supporting the communities around them and agriculture around them. So it's growing because the number of breweries are growing.
Well, you say it's not new. Do you mean just the remarkable growth in breweries? Because absolutely. But the growth in locally produced grains, local hops, sort of everything involved in the process being local does seem new to me. I mean, at least it's more marketed or more heralded now, because it wasn't the case in the 90s that you were getting, you know, beers that had all local ingredients,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. So we at the University of Vermont actually started working with hops and barley about a decade ago. And that's really when the interest started to come in, primarily from local brewers. I mean, there's really no other reason. We have no other business actually trying to produce hops or barley in Vermont unless, you know, there was a demand for it locally. And so, you know, about a decade ago, we started to see this increase. And certainly over the last 5 years, because again, just the rapid increase in breweries, that has really taken off.
Andrew, how did your business get started?
Well, I always thought I was going to open a brewery, and I wanted to differentiate myself by using local ingredients. So, you know, like what Heather's saying, 10 years ago, there wasn't a conversation about using something local. So for me, it was trying to find somebody with some local barley. I managed to find some from Jack Lazor's farm up in the Northeast Kingdom, and I malted it in the kitchen. And I decided I kind of liked that. And as I scaled it up, I realized, that was a full-time job. I couldn't do that and have a brewery. And at the same time, there were so many fantastic breweries opening up that it would be more fun to just supply them.
Can you give us a little beer education here and what it actually means to malt the barley?
Absolutely. So malting goes back roughly about 11,000 years. It's been around a long time. The process hasn't changed. The technology certainly has. So there's really three steps. So any kind of cereal grain can be malted. So we don't grow malt. We grow cereal grains. Barley is the most common. The first step is you're going to soak it. We want the seeds to all think they've been planted. So we soak them on and off for 2 days, letting them rest and then filled with water. Then they start, it's called chitting out, and then they'll start putting out little rootlets. And then we move them into a germination room. And in there, it's very high humidity and a very controlled environment that's just perfect for them to grow. And they'll grow in there for about 4 days. During that time, they're going to convert all of those stored starches into sugars, which they would use to start the plant if we let them, but we don't. We then put them in a kiln and we dry them back down to a stable level where they can then be used. That's your finished malt to be used for brewing.
Which does what to the beer?
Well, so we're going to then give those seeds to the brewers. They're going to mill them up, and the first process is called mashing in, and they add water and they're going to boil it. And they're looking for three main things. They're looking for the color, and the color is determined by how high the temperatures are when we kiln. They're looking for flavor, and that's obviously a big key. And they're looking for extract, and that's how much sugar there is in there. And that the final little part of the lesson there is that they'll introduce yeast, of course, and the yeast attacks those sugars, and the byproducts are carbon dioxide and alcohol.
And are you finding that there's more interest now? I mean, you started thinking you were going to be a brewer, and then it was like, oh, hang on, actually, there's a business here. And are you getting more inquiries about how brewers and distillers can use these local grains in their processes?
Absolutely. So for about the last year and a half, we've pretty much been sold out of everything we make. We've got a lot of breweries that are really interested in being able to source from us. It just hasn't been a possibility yet with the upcoming expansion. We'll be able to supply a whole lot more in the state.
Because you'll be growing your own?
We have been. We have been from the beginning. This is really just a larger facility by a large scale.
And this is the Nordic Farms that you are now going to be moving at least some into or totally into, which is in Charlotte.
We will end up moving entirely in there. We'll actually bring the old system over from Moncton once the new system's up and running. So right now we're building the new place while we're maintaining the existing place.
Heather, you also work in the research farm in Aalborg that works on growing these types of grains. What are you growing there and what are you experimenting with?
Yeah, so I mean, so we grow a lot of things up at the research farm, but specific to grain, we've been looking at barley, rye, wheat, triticale, spelt. So basically, these are cool season, annual, primarily winter grains, but some spring grains. And our whole goal behind looking at all of these different grains is value-added propositions for the farmers, and barley being one of those. So, you know, really headed into the malt market or distilling market. And wheat too. Andrew mentioned that malting isn't just with barley; it can be done with a lot of other grains too. And that's really exciting as well. Brewers here have the opportunity to, you know, think a little bit outside of the box and say, "Well, hey, we might, I might want to try malting with brewing with spelt." And Andrew could go ahead and do that in a smaller batch or a larger batch and accommodate a really unique need of a small craft brewer where otherwise they may not be able to have access to that kind of malt. So there still are a lot of, you know, really unique opportunities here.
Well, and it's interesting because we're not just talking about, you know, the sort of agricultural part of growing things in Vermont soil. And then at some point, you drink a beer. It's like there are all these other processes that have to go into
yeah.
it and steps and different people who come into that process in the middle, which is, you know, an interesting way to also think about this sort of local production that without, you know, without that sort of middle producer, you don't get the finished product necessarily from Vermont.
Yeah, I think One of the things that's interesting to me is people are used to buying something that's made and drinking or eating it, and like losing basically how do you get to that point? And most people are happy just to enjoy whatever's coming out of that can and not go any further than that. But it just does sort of happen in Vermont that more people do care about how we get, you know, from the soil all the way, you know, to the beer and that process along the way. And it's complicated, and it's even harder to do in Vermont than other places. So
because of our climate?
On my end, the end that I deal with, the crop end, yes, you know, the climate.
But sure. Otherwise, you're thinking what? Because of our size and scale?
Yeah, size, scale, climate, you know, sort of knowledge base, and infrastructure. You know, there's a lot of pieces that go into growing grain that we don't have, you know. So we're kind of rebuilding from ground zero and trying to, you know, come up with all the different pieces that we need to get the job done. And so it's a lot of different facets for sure.
Chris emailed in to say the Hired Hand Brewing and Bar Antidote Restaurant Group's owner and head brewer and chef, Ian Heisinger, has been brewing 5 or 6 different beers, all of which are on tap at his restaurant and tap room in Vergennes. Some brews utilize only ingredients grown within certain distances from town, and they are not only sustainable and responsibly grown, they are delicious as well. And Ron says, I've really enjoyed drinking local beer produced with local hops, especially those produced with Whitefield Hopyard hops from East Hardwick. I've had beers from a few area breweries with their hops, and they show that using local hops doesn't necessarily mean sacrificing quality. And Kempton's on the line with us from Cabot. Hi, Kempton. Okay. Go right ahead.
Sorry. So I was just going out to hang sap buckets today, and I heard the show. I'm the owner with my wife of Hooker Mountain Farm Distillery in Cabot. And this is exactly what we do. We're really one of the first diversified agricultural distilling operations in the Northeast. We have a 66-acre farm, and we raise as many inputs for our spirits as we possibly can. So we grow grains. I grow flint corn and oats and potatoes. We have a small micro dairy here on the farm that provides milk for some specialty spirits. We use a lot of sap and maple that we produce on the farm to sweeten. I use a sap to blend a vodka with. So we're out here doing it. And we have a tasting room down in the Marshfield Village store nearby. And the response over the last 2 years has been really fantastic for what we're trying to do.
Kempton, what do you see as the main challenges? I mean, one of the joys is, of course, making it all yourself, and there's that value-added idea that Heather Darby was talking about, and the ability to charge more because people will often pay more for a product where the ingredients are made locally and produced locally. It also costs more in many cases. But what about the challenges? What do you find most challenging about this?
I always tell people that the farming is so much harder than the actual distilling and blending of the spirits. We started as a small farm that's been going for 10 years. I don't come from a farming background, and gaining that knowledge and all of the pieces, like Heather mentioned, that go into producing grain, it's extremely complicated going from the field all the way into a finished product in one location. So, for instance, this year I grew flint corn, and I've had lots of different struggles with growing corn. But this year we had a problem with storage. Next year will be another thing to work on is improving our corn crib and storage facilities. So there are always improvements. We're always learning more about the process. That's the biggest challenge, and we make up for that by being so diversified. So if we have a problem in one area, we'll obviously have something good happen on another part of the farm to make up for it.
Well, Kempton, thanks for sharing your experience and Hooker Mountain Farm Distillery process that you've been going through. Appreciate that. Andrew, do you agree that the growing is has such variability that that's a real challenge?
Absolutely. We've seen that year to year. We have been really lucky to have Heather and the UVM research to trial lots of different varieties to see what does well in Vermont. And we've relied on that and, finding out what has good disease resistance and what has decent yields and that sort of thing. It's been particularly challenging to sort of figure out how we sort through all that. And again, the infrastructure, what Kempton was mentioning, we're putting in a lot more grain storage. One of the things we're really interested in doing is actually segregating the grain. So we grow most of it ourselves, but we have started working with more and more farmers around the state. So the idea that we've got a couple farmers this year for the first time up in Franklin County, the idea that we could put their harvest in a particular bin and then malt that and then send that back to the breweries in Franklin County where people can be drinking beer, from their backyard.
If I was sitting here with you and you blindfolded me and you didn't tell me anything about the beer, so I'm not looking at it with this lens of like, ooh, I've read the label and it's all local and what a beautiful can and, and a beautiful color. If I'm just drinking it, am I going to taste something different about barley that's grown in Vermont and malted in Vermont?
In a finished beer, probably not. So there are a lot of different things that are going to go in there. The brewers, they work like chefs. So it's, you're looking at a jambalaya there of all sorts of ingredients. And I think it's really difficult to just sort of separate it out. As we're seeing more and more folks making a Pilsner style, which is super light, that really does accentuate the grain and the malt more than anything else. And with those, where the hops don't have as much presence, there you can notice a difference. We can taste something and say, yeah, that's definitely a Vermont malt. Part of it is just the freshness of it. So, 5 years ago, there wasn't even a possibility of using something from the East Coast. It was coming from Germany or the Pacific Northwest, so it might be, months or older and blended by the time it hits the brewery. We're seeing brewers being able to brew with malt that is a week old, and that's a whole new level for them.
So you think I might taste the freshness more than saying, oh, yes, I can tell that was malted here.
You feel the green mountains.
Right. Right, exactly, yeah. Yeah, it's all in your head, right?
Right. And, Heather, certainly for people who are producing at scale, homebrewers might have so many variations in what they're making anyway that sort of variability wouldn't be a problem. But if you're making something at scale commercially that consumers expect a certain taste, you want that consistency. You don't want something that's like, whoa, okay, that's a different flavor necessarily. So are you finding that in Vermont we can have that consistency so that our larger craft brewers are still and distillers are still able to have a consistent product that they can expect to have the sort of same flavor profiles from again and again?
I think that it's possible. I'm not sure if there's any really large breweries at this point using, there really hasn't been the volume at this point. And so, but I believe it's certainly possible for that to happen. Malt is different than hops, or barley is different than hops. Hops do pick up a terroir in their aromatics. And so that could really change. So a beer made with a Cascade from the Pacific Northwest could taste really different than a beer made with Cascade from Vermont. And we know that. With barley, I think it's a little bit different. We don't pick up those same terroirs. We don't, that we would in hops. So I think it's possible. We're not there yet. We'd probably come back in another year or two, hopefully, maybe 2 years, and say, Budweiser's buying all of their malt from Andrew Peterson. Or wait, maybe Coors. They're a little bit smaller.
probably.
And, yeah. And wow, the Coors tastes the same now as it did from Golden, Colorado. They're not going to do that.
They're not going to do that. And in fact, the big breweries go to remarkable lengths to blend and figure out what varieties from year to year because they want that sameness. So, a Budweiser in San Diego tastes the same as a Budweiser in Boston. I think part of what's exciting about the craft beer movement is for these smaller breweries, while there is consistency they want, if there's this particular beer they're making, they want it to taste pretty much the same every time. but there's still that same level of variability that people in the wine industry are used to. Mm-hmm. You know, so you're talking about, well, this tastes a little bit different than last time, and it's not always this quantitative thing of well, it's this degree to this degree. It's, well, I like this one. This one maybe is a little bit better. Let's see what next month holds. And really kind of giving people the options. But yeah, with barley, it's the same thing. You know, field to field and variety to variety and year to year, there's variation.
Also joining us now is Avery Schwenk. He's co-founder of Brattleboro's Hermit Thrush Brewery and acting president of the Vermont Brewers Association. Avery, it's nice to have you join the conversation.
Good afternoon.
So at Hermit Thrush, I've been to the brewery, pride yourself on using local ingredients. How do you manage that, and how do you figure out how to source and how to brew?
That's an excellent question. So I think, interestingly, our very first brewery, I was just thinking about this today, the very first beer we made at our brewery was using a local malt house and local hops in it. So it's something we've been interested in since the very beginning of our brewery about 4 years ago. And really, I think our approach that maybe is somewhat different from some other breweries around the country and in the state is that we try to approach beers with local ingredients the same way that I would approach using like a CSA. So instead of going to the supermarket and picking out the ingredients that I want to make the meal I expect, I look at what's available in my CSA and I combine those in a way into a meal, or in this case, a beer that highlights those ingredients and their freshness.
And at Hermit Thrush, you make sour beers. Can you just very briefly educate people on what goes into making a sour beer?
Absolutely. So, that's our specialty. Every beer we make is a sour beer. And what that's doing is using yeast and bacteria other than, your traditional beer fermentation yeast to do the fermentation step that Andrew was talking about earlier. So taking those sugars and turning into alcohol and carbon dioxide. But because it's not just that basic beer yeast, we get some other byproducts, many of which are acids and other kind of aromatic things that give that beer its tartness.
Now, we were talking with Heather and Andrew a few minutes ago about cost, and growing locally often means it costs more to produce. You're not growing at as large a scale. Sometimes the climate and inconsistency can add costs. And your beers are expensive, Avery. One can cost $10 or $15, a 16-ounce can. So is that about saying we're a premium product and people pay for it because of the cachet? Or is that about what it actually costs to make it because you're using these local ingredients and local processes?
I would say it's a combination of both. Particularly, that cost point really comes in with our barrel-aged sours. And that is, something that we're harnessing. Again, that's actually using local yeast, so another, kind of use of local terroir. And that takes a lot of time. So those beers are usually aged 8 to 12. We're actually working on a 3-year beer currently. That's about a year and a half in. So part of that is just the time that takes to go into those beers. But actually, with a lot of our locally focused beers, especially ones featuring hops, we try to make that turnaround time a little shorter. So there's some other steps you can make to make a sour beer that's kind of more affordable, kind of more on the normal beer timeline, so we can get our 4-pack price down to anywhere from like $13 to $18 and still feature those local ingredients. So it's really just picking which ingredients and your approaches to how you're brewing that can really have a difference on your beer cost.
Heather Darby, those costs, though, are a big part of this and probably a big calculation for all producers in thinking about, what can I actually charge that consumers will pay for? And, how much is it going to cost? Is it actually cheaper for me, even if you calculate in the shipping costs, to, go to some massive producer who can do this at scale pretty cheaply versus going to a local producer? And, I wonder if you think about and talk to farmers about the calculations involved in trying to figure out how to make this work at the local level.
Yes. I was just thinking that if we were trying to do it the cheapest, we wouldn't be doing it. That's not even the calculations that we're running. We have to calculate, what's the true cost of producing these products here, and then what does the farmer need to get from whoever they're selling it to be able to pay for their costs and make some modest return on what they're doing. And, the profit margins on farms are very slim, actually. It doesn't matter really what you're doing for the most part. But to be able to produce these crops here, we do have to get a higher price. Our cost of production is much higher than it is in the bigger agricultural states. It's just the way it is. So if the end user's not willing to pay a higher price, it's not going to exist. It's just, you know, it's not optional, actually. So, you know, like Avery is saying, I love his approach. I love that analogy of, you know, the CSA. We've bought in these local ingredients. Now we figure out how to use them. And I've heard other brewers say that very same thing, that they're really invested in high quality local, not just local, and then excited about what they're getting and what can they create with it, instead of using the cookbook that exists. So, but the cost is going to be higher.
Well, what we've seen, so there are four breweries in the state that are using as much Vermont malt as they can. Their prices really aren't that different. The reasoning is the materials cost in most beers is only about 10%. So there's a lot of other things that goes in. So our malts right now are about twice as much as what you would get from somebody out west or from Europe. But that translation into a pint of beer is about 16 cents. So if you're paying $6 for a pint of beer and we're upping it to $6.25, I don't think there's anybody that really is going to notice that. It's not like you know, beef or vegetables where you might have to pay a hefty premium.
Or perhaps hops. Let's go to Julian, who's calling in from Starksboro. Hi, Julian. You're a hop grower?
Hi, yeah.
Yeah, so what's your perspective? What do you think people should know about this whole local twist on growing Vermont beers?
Sure. Yeah, there's a couple things, I think. I think, you know, Heather mentioned earlier that hops really can exhibit a unique flavor profile based on where they were grown. And since we know that, our main focus as growers is to grow the absolute best quality product we can, so to let those kind of unique flavors show through in the hops. And so we've really focused not only on growing experience and working with Heather to get that experience, but also processing to make sure we're using the absolute best possible equipment.
Julian, for hops, you know, one of the things that we think about in beers is you don't necessarily hear that much about the specific grain and the type of grain. But hops, you know, people make their beers on what hops they're using. And so you think of Cascade hops from the Pacific Northwest and the flavor profiles and the beers that have come out that are really riding on that hop flavor profile. For Vermont,
sure.
What flavors are we experiencing in our hops? And, you know, can you actually get that flavor of Vermont through the hops in a different way than you are, say, from the malt?
Yeah, so actually I think you might want to ask Heather on that, because I think she's starting a study now that might look at, and they actually did a collaboration with Switchback Brewery and looking at some of the different unique aromas you can get from Vermont-grown hops. But from my one thing I would say on the varieties is that a cascade here, it's almost like you don't even want to call it a cascade, because what people are finding, and this, as people are growing in other regions such as Michigan, I talked with a Vermont brewer recently who was talking about a Michigan Chinook, which Chinook is another variety of hop, that had a kind of dank quality that he hadn't encountered before, and how he incorporates that into the beers he's brewing.
Hmm. What do you grow, Julian?
So we grow seven varieties. We grow Chinook, Cascade, Centennial, Willamette, Crystal, Nugget.
Julian, thanks for the call. Appreciate that. Heather Darby, what about those flavor profiles from hops? And, you know, is a Cascade hop that Julian's growing here in Vermont going to taste different from one that came from Oregon?
Yes, it is. And we're seeing this more and more, and trying to be able to document what those flavor profiles are. But this has taken – it takes time to establish if there's a consistent profile or if it actually is even different from farm to farm. And what they've shown in the Pacific Northwest is that the subtleties can differ from farm to farm. So – we're having a little bit of trouble trying to find those consistencies. Can we say a Cascade hop in Vermont, you know, has this aroma profile? And right now we can't. We can't say every Cascade hop tastes a little more grapefruity here than it does in the Pacific Northwest. But the exciting piece of that is that when Avery purchases hops from Four Star Farms in Massachusetts, it's going to be really unique and different than what he might get from Julian. And he's ready for that uniqueness and how to work with it. And Foam Brewery has said the same. They brought in hops from the Norris Farm up in Starksboro, and they had never smelt these tangerine before. So, I mean, it's really exciting. And we're working on answering that question. Jane, we're just not quite there.
Hey, Avery, what about for you? Does that excite you? I mean, it sounds like that's part of how you've built your business, is to be able to deal with and embrace that variability.
Absolutely. I think, yeah, we have a pretty great partnership with, as mentioned, Four Star Farms. They're in Massachusetts, but about 20 miles away from our brewery, so about as local as we can get. But really just working with them on what hops they're growing that we like and how we can continue to highlight those in our beers. So yeah, it is really, yeah, exactly as stated.
And Avery, do you think Vermont is in the conversation nationally about beers and the changing industry? I mean, distilleries too, but your focus is on beers and in the Vermont Brewers Association. Do you think we're sort of part of this bigger conversation about that changing industry?
Absolutely. I think both nationally and even globally, we have world-recognized quality for beers, in particular IPAs that are featuring hops, and I'd love to see more of those hops being sourced locally if possible.
Avery Schwenk is co-founder of Brattleboro's Hermit Thrush Brewery, also acting president of the Vermont Brewers Association. Avery, thanks for being on the program.
Thank you.
And here in Colchester with me is Heather Darby, associate professor with UVM Extension's Northwest Crops and Soils Program, Northwest Vermont, not Northwest United States. And Andrew Peterson, head maltster and owner of Peterson Quality Malt, a craft malt house based in Moncton. Thank you both for being on the program today.
Thank
Cheers.
You.
Cheers. Thanks.